The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And now, Cooper takes the ball out of bounds, baseline.
Live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge podcast channel. Today's episode is obviously an episode of The Hook. All of that stuff, all of this stuff is brought to you by Prize Picks here on YouTube. I am joined on this fine Friday afternoon, your favorite day of the week, by Pete Zayas of the Laker Film Room podcast. He and I have a ton that we're going to be talking about. We have just got word basically a few hours or so before we went live that the Lakers waived Kobe Bufkin to open up a 15th roster spot. And they have some options, actually. I think Pete and I both have a preferred direction that they would go in here. But I think there are some options, and I'm going to bring some off of the board names just to spice things up a little bit here. And then I've noticed this thing over the course of, especially the last couple months or so of the season, that Pete and I seem, by our standards, really far apart on a subject, which is always really interesting to me, because you and I tend to see eye to eye on basically everything, really, like not just basketball.
It's not,
but
it's not good to see eye to eye on everything. It's, you know,
most things, have a little debate, I would say. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's also Masters week, so if you guys catch me looking off to the side here, it's because Rory McIlroy is just freaking charging through the field again, and it's just so much fun. This is my favorite non-basketball week of the year. But yeah, Pete, how are you holding up?
I'm good. Interesting move. That Warriors win certainly picked up my spirits a bit. It had been,
oh God, yeah,
been rough since last time we talked. So yeah.
Yeah. It is funny. Like, you know, the last time you and I spoke, we were pretty enthusiastic, pretty optimistic, really excited about what direction the Lakers were heading in. And then you and I both walked into the room and everybody's hair was on fire. So, yeah. You know, that's basically where we find ourselves at now. That Warriors win, I thought, was honestly crucial, like legitimately critical, just to get the vibes right back. I think LeBron even spoke to the vibes after the game last night, which is pretty rare to see any player, but let alone a great player, speaking to the vibes in the locker room that way. I thought that was pretty enlightening. And also I thought kind of gave us some insight into how close this team has become over the course of the season, which I think we will get to later in the show. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in again. Hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, hit that share button, turn on notifications for YouTube so that the notifications actually show up on your phone, subscribe on podcast, whatever. Also use promo code HMA on Prize Picks to get $50 in lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup using that promo code. All right. So the Lakers, it was reported first by Shams Charani. It was funny. We actually spoke about this yesterday in the offside chat. Briefly was like, you know, and this is something that I've been kind of talking about on this channel and then kind of alluding to there as well. Is like, if Bronny has surpassed Bufkin in the rotation to the extent that he clearly had, and then yesterday it was even more kind of pronounced the how far Bufkin had fallen because Nick Smith Jr. was getting minutes ahead of him. It was like, all right, this guy, like that, the Lakers can't waste that roster spot. They have enough room under the hard cap now to bring in somebody else. And that is the direction that they elected to go in. They have some options on the other side of this. I don't think it's worth like wasting the time to kind of relitigate the decision to sign Kobe Bufkin. I didn't love it in the first place. I just didn't think that that was a position that they needed to fill at that time, but it's one of those like extremely low leverage decisions that clearly the Lakers were able to get out of very quickly. Yeah. So
they wanted a longer look at him. They weren't ready for somebody else to sign him. He'd been playing very well. Like it was like, I think it, and also I thought they knew that they could pivot at the end of the season if they wanted to.
Yeah, so I it's not really worth the time here. If anything, I actually think it shows a little bit of growth from this front office that they were able to pivot so quickly off of a guy that they clearly really like, you know, and for them to also pivot off of the direction that they take that 15th roster spot, right, where that's kind of the project spot. You know, that's kind of the guy that you kind of tuck away and you work at and you see what that guy can become. Now they're like, all of our ball handling is gone. So we actually do need more talent, whether that be ball handling talent or just overall NBA talent on this roster going into the playoffs. And I think being able to pivot both off of a guy that they like and a direction that they take that roster spot, I think shows growth here from the front office. Do you want to start with overall options, Pete, or do you want to start by making the case for who you would prefer they use this roster spot on?
Overall options that'll lead to the answering of the second one. I think I'd be very surprised if it's somebody other than Drew Timmy or at a much smaller percentage chance, Nick Smith Jr.
And that's what I've been hearing is it seems like it's Timmy's spot to lose.
And I agree with that. That's my preference as well. Now, I know that there are talented players out there and there's, you know, this loss of, like you said, of both Luka and of Austin, where it's like, we don't have our ball handling ability. We don't have ball handlers where it's like, you know, Cole Anthony, Chris Paul, guys like that. I think especially an ingredient as strong as Chris Paul, right? And really as old as he is too, but like dropping a new ingredient right before everything's done cooking, you're a much better cook. You're an excellent cook. I can attest to that. But like, imagine you're making something and you spend
dropping cayenne pepper.
Yeah, right at the end, you're just like, fuck it. Just like, you know?
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why, like, Chris Paul is kind of a severe example of that. But I think that somebody who's been around, somebody who's played in the system that's like, been part of the story up until this. Nick Smith Jr. was a much bigger character earlier in the season. I think one of the ways I think it's kind of fun to think of it from the perspective of like, could we pick up somebody to help us beat Houston or to help us beat Minnesota? Because I think that's really what the puzzle is right now. And one of the things I'm concerned about like with Houston is their ability to pressure the ball. But if you have a five that can handle the ball, like what's Şengün going to get up in your jersey? Like it sort of breaks the idea apart of what Houston wants to do and could do against us to really, you know what I'm saying?
It's the one unathletic spot that they have, you know.
And then they kick our ass on the boards, right? And Timmy can actually space the floor out to the 3-point line. So you can go too big. So Timmy would give us a too big look. Now you could do that with Kleba as well, but Kleba's jump shot left him like 3 years ago. And Timmy isn't like a knockdown shooter, but he can do it. He's a good passer, can handle the ball a little bit. You know, he was playing.
He's also like a more willing shooter than Kleba. Kleba's like, he looks at the rim and he's just like,
swing it. Yeah.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
But yeah, I'm 100% there with you with Timmy. I would add to those reasons that you were kind of talking about there. LeBron's going to spend so much time on the ball, so much more time on the ball in the playoffs than, like, if this was a regular season spot, I could understand, you know, signing a guard to a 10-day just to get you through this stretch here, you know. But and it was funny last night on the show, I was kind of talking about the ways that Houston really kind of messes with teams' offenses, and in that I think that the Lakers are kind of uniquely positioned to overcome that obstacle. If you have, if your guard, right, is your engine, if your guard is the guy that gets you into everything, that guard is more likely to be affected by Amen Thompson, by Tari Eason, by all those just crazy fast long wings. Then if you're a team like Houston, or then if you're a team like I think the Lakers can be, that would operate more out of the post and basically run kind of a fulcrum offense around post presences. And I think that's the direction that they – I don't know if they will go this way, but that's the direction – that's the adjustment that I would make for this series specifically until you get more – you know, until the cavalry shows up. But, yeah, The Timmy thing makes the most sense to me. I understand, like, it's tough to have this conversation, Pete, because like in my mentions, when I said that I think this spot should and will go to Drew Timmy, it was like, how can you possibly make the case for anybody other than Nick Smith Jr. seeing as he has been walking around with his pants on fire the last couple of times that we've seen him. And then obviously remember what he looked like earlier in the year. And given the Lakers' very stark guard rotation,
Let's talk about that. There's an argument to be made that we need a guard. So like, I think that we made our case for Timmy, but like, there's a case for that too.
So I think the case is basically the Lakers are really going to struggle to score, and Nick Smith Jr. comes off of the bench, and if he like turns one game with knocking down like three or four 3-pointers or something like that, then the decision also, just to be absolutely clear here, we talked about the decision to waive Kobe Bufkin and to sign him in the first place being low leverage. I think this is also a low leverage decision that I don't think.
Oh, totally. I don't think there's any like Timmy's going to save us. Damn it. Yeah, no,
it's not. Yeah. So like, but I will say though, like the argument for Nick Smith Jr., at least from my perspective, is it does give you more firepower. You know, like Nick Smith Jr. is far more likely to hit a few 3-pointers in the game than Drew Timmy is to affect the game to that extent. If Nick Smith gets enough minutes to do that, the Lakers have also like the Lakers also like Marcus Smart has just like turned the ball over, dribbled it off his foot, bringing the ball up the court. We've obviously like the clips that went viral of Kayson Wallace just yanking Bronny's chain from him, you know, that also is in you know people's minds, and maybe Nick Smith Jr. kind of alleviates that pressure. Is there anything else that I kind of missed there on what he brings to the table?
No, I think he's also it's important to have guys that can play on ball and off ball, I think, at the guard spot. And so he provides that as well. Just like he's not just a ball handler, and but he's not just a spot up guy either. My concern against whether we play Houston or Minnesota is the level of physicality with a guy like Smith, is that there's going to be a lot of like, the Lakers switch a ton. And so it's, you're going to be on a bigger, more athletic dude. And we're already playing one guy like that in Kennard, that is just too important to the offense to not play. But I think there is going to be a point of the playoffs where it's like, you know, they're going to target Kennard. That's going to be like, if we play either of those teams, that's going to be a big part of what their game plan is against the Lakers. And so there's just Smith on the defensive end. I think we need a certain amount of size against Houston to be able to combat, you know, what they're doing. And so I agree with the points being made in the ball handling sense, in that like they could pressure guys like Marcus and all of that. But that's also part of the reason why I like Timmy, is because you kind of flip that on its head. If you can have a five just literally bring the ball up court and you flow into your handoff series and stuff like that, which Lakers have been doing a ton of, and you know, you can sort of like get the wheel moving in that way.
He's also Timmy is such a quick decision maker. Like, and I think that is so critical in the postseason when in a LeBron offense, like, cause this is what, that's what this is going to become.
Yeah.
The Lakers are now running the LeBron offense, and
And
Timmy's quick decision abilities is something that really comes in handy there.
And I want to talk about his defense though, right? That's to be like, oh, Nick Smith Jr., you can't play him because of his defense. And then be like, but Drew Timmy's great. You know, not talk about the defense again is a little dishonest. I think just the nature of both Minnesota and Houston, they're just big ass teams. And I think that Timmy is going to have a harder time against teams that have ball handling guards that can run pick and roll. Like you get him in a drop coverage, or if he has to guard a guy like that in space, but that's one of the, and so like Minnesota, I think it'd be harder. Like if he ends up, I don't think you could put him in like a lot of Ant minutes, for example, if Ant is on the court, but that's one of Houston's biggest weaknesses, is like, they can't dribble. They don't have guys who could dribble. They don't have guards really in a lot of ways. And so, the like downhill pick and roll type of threat is less so with a team like Houston. It's just not how they play that. I think it makes it, I think it masks some of Timmy's weaknesses, and the fact that he can rebound and is just big and allows you to play two big lineups. So the five you have out there is bigger. I think that sort of trumps the argument for Smith.
Yeah. It would be one thing if, and we'll talk about some of the non-Lakers options here in a second, but it would be one thing if like Nick Smith Jr. was, you know, if like Chris Mignon had gotten minutes over the course of the year, right? And he was actually like a plus defender. Then I'd be like, okay, let's have that conversation. But neither guy is particularly good defensively. I would just rather go with the bigger guy. And then also like, Drew Timmy's a better basketball player right now than Nick Smith Jr. is. And I just think the Lakers need talent. Like they're just, they're operating at such a talent deficit right now that I'm just like, give me the best available basketball player.
That's fair too.
Yeah. So the other thing too, you know, there are options who aren't in the Lakers organization. I see Brian Cruz bringing up Malik Beasley. I don't think he's an option.
Legit belly laugh. Yeah. Not because he can't play.
Well, we don't know who he'd be playing for. Yeah. But so the options here, the one that came to mind and the one that was mentioned the most often or most frequently on Twitter and in my mentions and stuff like that since has been Chris Paul, right? And like we talked about, adding Chris Paul at this point would be like dumping some cayenne pepper in the spaghetti right before you go out and you serve it. And, you know, maybe you mix that sauce up just enough and it becomes this like really fun, zesty version of spaghetti. But there's also a possibility that you serve it to a mostly white family that's eating it there. And they're like, what the hell is this? You know, and there's just too much of a shock to the system. I will say, because I knew that we were going to go in this direction, I will say that like one fun aspect of adding Chris Paul to this is that it seems like the likeliest second round opponent that the Lakers might have is San Antonio. And Chris Paul just recently played for San Antonio. So maybe you want to go Machiavelli in there and see if he can provide you some extra intel. Aside from that, though, like the Chris Paul thing, it really makes me nervous, Pete, that the Clippers season turned around as soon as they told that guy to go away. Like, I've never been a big Chris Paul fan anyway, but like, just in terms of the way that seasons have played out so far this year, the Clippers season, like, they beat the Lakers, which was, you know, the get right game. But then also, like, they had also around that same time told Chris Paul to stay in, what was it, Atlanta? Like, wherever the whichever airport that they were stuck at for the amount of time that they were stuck there. And then immediately their season turned around. And then we find out that he was kind of doing some coaching behind the scenes that the Clippers didn't want him doing. You had Jeff Van Gundy telling Chris Paul that, you know, you're not that guy anymore, essentially. And that, like, reported unwillingness to not, or that reported unwillingness to accept the role and accept his mortality makes me kind of nervous. Is there any case for Chris Paul?
No, because he isn't good anymore on top of that either.
Yeah, you know? And he wasn't exactly a playoff riser. So, like the idea of, like, all right, Chris Paul, save us for the playoffs. It's like,
honestly, Cole Anthony is a more interesting name to me than Chris Paul is, just from he's you know, in his 20s and capable of playing. I think that introducing a new ball handler, because it's so, like, I don't know, if you've ever played basketball, even if it's pickup ball, you get in a certain rhythm with other players. You're just, you play a few games with another, like, you're better after 10 games of playing with each other than you are at the beginning, just off of familiarity. And so just introducing a new ball handler, and we don't really have, like, that 6 foot tall scatterbug type of, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a different rhythm to relocating and all of that. It still falls into me into that, like, whole adding a new ingredient late in the game. But I do think if you're going to go the guard route and, like, somebody who can kind of sort of hold their own, that's probably the best name. But the reason, but that being the best name is part of the reason why I think they're just going to stay in house.
Yeah, me too. And you know, the other thing too is whoever they add, if it's not within the Lakers, if that player doesn't come from the Lakers organization, that player is going to be playing for his next contract. And they're already up against it. And you need everybody rowing in the same direction here. And I don't need to add that variable on top of the lack of the chemistry there. And again, like we talked about at the top of the show, this locker room seems pretty unified. And adding any kind of voice there, and you know, Drew Timmy is somebody who you've said is really popular.
Oh, yeah. Timmy's very popular
as well. So, like, it's just, I don't know. It's a fairly slam dunk case. I saw people mention Spencer Dinwiddie, and I've seen, like, I'm good. It's got to be Timmy. All right. We've spent a lot of time on the 15th roster spot heading into the postseason. And let's go ahead and segue on over to the subject that you and I are, I think, furthest apart on that we've been in a long time, maybe ever. And that's LeBron James's future.
Okay.
I don't want to speak for you, though, because what I've been thinking about as we were kind of prepping for the show is there's a difference between what you would want to happen and what you're saying you think is going to happen. So I'm just going to get out of the way here and let you kind of explain what you think is going to happen and what you would prefer happen here, because just in case, those are two separate things.
I don't know what's going to happen. I guess the most succinct way that I could explain my position is I think the Lakers have more options to do what they want to do next year without LeBron than LeBron has without the Lakers, right? Like, so getting to Cleveland, for example, would be difficult in large part because of Cleveland's cap situation and the maneuvers that they would need to make to be able to do that. He could take a minimum in any place, or he could take a, like, super low contract or an MLE somewhere, right? And that to me is the, again, and I'm not talking like MLE level, I think it would be more, but I think that a big discount, like a low salary amount, that very much raises the likelihood of him returning to the Lakers next year, right? But I think the Lakers have put themselves in a position where they've been gearing toward this summer as the summer to sort of move on for LeBron. And one of the that doesn't mean that they have to, right? What's their key buzzword that Plink always talks about? Optionality. And that's why what I think is going to happen is they're going to evaluate all their options that are in front of them, some of which have not been revealed yet because the draft is to come. The Giannis situation is a huge domino to fall.
Playoff runs decide decisions that teams
right,
need to.
Yeah, who you want to – yeah, there's so much yet to happen that there's just no possible way to be for me to be like, I think this is what's going to happen. That said, I do think that Bron – I think if Bron is willing to come back at a – and I don't think he ever expected necessarily to get a max or anything like that. But if he's coming back at a lower salary amount, that at least leaves enough for one really good starter to be added to the team. I think that that is probably the level of salary he needs to get to for him to come back. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The thing I wanted to say to you was – true or false, based on all of the people you've talked to, everything you've known and information you've gathered over the years, do you believe that the Lakers' current front office gave up on the LeBron and AD duo earlier than people like you and I did, earlier than the fan base did? From a we can win a championship with these guys
perspective. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know,
yeah, I think so too.
I think so. And like when you talk about like them kind of circling, this is the summer that they would be able to, or that LeBron would walk, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you start considering flexibility that would come from somebody's departure, that usually is kind of a, like it, like if I was, you know, with a girl and we were living together and then, you know, randomly someday she starts like measuring where like my office is, you know, for potential other furniture, that's usually kind of a signifier that she's like, I should probably start looking for another place, you know? And I feel like that's the way that we've been kind of talking about LeBron, is that like LeBron has a sofa that he really, really likes there. And the Lakers are like, yeah, but that could be an end table instead, you know? And so, yeah, I think that like, I'm with you there. Did you want to build on that point?
No, I think when you said we're as far apart as we've ever been on something, I think it's more we're coming at it from a different perspective, is that you can make the judgment on the Lakers front office sort of having. So I think the point where they showed that they had given up on the LeBron and AD duo was the trade deadline of 23 and 24. So that was the year we had Torian Prince and the marathon year and all of that. And so the Lakers are like a 500 team at the trade deadline. And they're like, we've got some options, but we're saving this for the next era. And they end up with Luka right after the AD trade and all that. And so I guess the point that I'm making is whatever our judgment is on them making that decision, that it's time to sort of move to that next era, I think that they've absolutely pointed all of their decisions in that direction. We need to, and that it's smart to acknowledge that at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I kind of wanted to start with, all right, what we think is going to happen and the way that the winds have been blowing to this point and what we think should happen, right? Mm-hmm. And whether we agree with that direction that they've been taking now for years. You know, and
that's all
and
the
so,
point like, that I'm making. It's right in front of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, do you agree with the direction that they have taken this? And do you agree with this notion of like measuring the space that would be left by LeBron's couch?
Yeah. Well, so first off, it's not LeBron's couch. It's LeBron. I mean, that's the best to ever do it right there. That's like
it's a great,
so
brilliant couch.
So many ways. Yeah. Like the idea that we're going to lose LeBron and this is going to get better is not impossible at this age, because he's unprecedented in year 23, but he's still so brilliant, and he's shown that in the last two games that he's played, especially, that he's just starting to reach this level where it's like, hey, I recognize that guy, you know. That the idea that there's a replacement for that will be better, like, I'd love to hear it. I do think that they've put themselves in a position to be right there for some of the best players in the game, and like Giannis is one of the only names where it's like, yeah, Giannis is better than LeBron right now. Like, whatever injury worries or things like that, he's the one guy where it's like, yeah, that's a better player, but that's going to come at a cost, right? And so that's what you have to measure. It's like, do we want to take everything that comes with Giannis, which right at the top is his salary, he'd cost picks and all of that, or would it be better to have LeBron at 25 million or whatever, whatever the number they come at. You know what I'm saying? That to me is more of the calculation. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I am of the opinion, and I have been basically, attacking this whole subject from the standpoint of like, let's remove LeBron making 50 million or anywhere close to that from the equation, because he's not getting that from anybody.
Right.
You know, so we'll just separate that from this conversation altogether. And then the next step from there is like a reasonable salary that LeBron wouldn't be insulted by. Right. So that would probably be in that, that would probably be in that $30 to $40 million range. But once again, who's giving LeBron James $40 million next year or even more than 30? I just, the Warriors can't. I guess the Clippers could if they make some kind of tree deal. You could like the Cavs cannot. The Cavs have a hard enough time. Like the way that you would get to it is, or for the Cavs is to like sign and trade Jared Allen. And then LeBron slots into that cap slot. But in order to even do that, they need to shed additional salary without taking back any more salary just for that opportunity. So even the Cavs don't make a whole bunch of sense or any real sense there as a team that could pay LeBron a salary that he wouldn't be insulted by. Mm-hmm. And so like, all right, so what's the next slot down? That's in that $20 to $30 million range that you had kind of alluded to there. And once again, Cavs can't, Warriors can't, Clippers might be able to if they void Kawhi's contract. So we'll see what happens there. The Lakers can get to, like, they have his bird rights. They have all this cap flexibility anyway. Like, the Lakers can get to that number. And also you add to that situation that Bronny is still technically on the books, though at a partial guarantee for next season. So might not be. And then you add to that, you know, Savannah doesn't want to go back to Cleveland. Whenever I ask around, that is made abundantly clear that she very much likes it in LA. Yeah, he has a son,
comfortable life.
Yeah. He has a son in, at the University of Arizona. And that is a nice quick flight from LA, which is part of the reason that Savannah prefers LA to Ohio. And then, you know, also just from a sheer basketball standpoint, the only one team employs Luka Doncic of the teams that we're talking about here. And so for me, it's like you add all of it together. And yes, there are compromises that have to be made by all parties, right? The Lakers would have to, you know, kind of swallow their pride and go back to them and be like, okay, we know that we planned for this summer.
No, but it wasn't just the like, oh, LeBron will leave this summer. It's just that if LeBron's done, this is when his contract is going to run out. We're going to be in a position to go and make the next step.
Yeah.
Right. And put ourselves in a good position. But if one of those options is Bron coming back, it's just got to be this team needs to add talent to become a championship contender. They cannot come back with the same team and be like, how about now? You know?
March was fun. No, I agree. I agree with you. I agree wholeheartedly. However, I would add to that, though, that like as far as like the LeBron Lakers relationship goes, as soon as Luka showed up, and I'm not saying that this isn't what most teams would do, but as soon as Luka showed up, Rob needed to be asked about LeBron to talk about him in press conferences, you know? Like specifically asked, so I'm curious what your reaction there is, because that could be two directions, right? You could be rolling your eyes at me noticing that, or you could be acknowledging.
Oh, I wasn't rolling my eyes. No. Okay. I was laughing at the. Sorry if I got you jumpy with my facial expression. No. I was very. I wasn't rolling my eyes. I was cracking up because it was like, no, that's absolutely a valid observation. It's also like I think he wanted to shine the light on Luka more than anything else, right?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Also, right, like the reporting that came out about the whole, you know, genie clutch thing and Rich Paul running out there and starting a podcast to make the case that the Lakers should trade Austin Reeves, who is their second favorite player on the roster. Like, that relationship is not devoid of tension.
They got a lot of history together. How many couples do you know that have been together for like almost 10 years that don't have some?
Again, measuring tape is out, and they, like, normally you don't get there without a couple bumps in the road.
There's a lot of good there too, though.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's like, also, and I am probably one of the more cynical people that you know, and one of the, like, I probably connect more dots than most people that you know. And some of the dots that I've been connecting on the positive side here recently is that I don't think LeBron accepts the role that he did in March if he isn't bought in to this organization. Mm-hmm. I also don't think that LeBron works his ass off to the extent that he has since Luka and Austin went down to try to keep this plane in the air without them if he isn't bought in to this. Mm-hmm. And then again, we kind of talked about it at the top of the show, but he was talking about our two guys, right? He's talking about our two guys, Luka and Austin. He had Austin on his podcast. He is, I think, very much bought into what they built in March. And, you know, you combine that with the fact that he has won a championship in LA. I think that there are certainly idiots within the Lakers fan base who never really accepted him. But I do think for the most part that like the fan base has enjoyed the LeBron James experience. And I think enjoyed the LA experience, you know? So I think it all comes out to, and we'll see how the season ends. You know, that goes a long way. Recency bias is a thing in these things, but I was asking around today, and there is a lot more from Lakers people that I talked to, a lot more uncertainty than there was certainly at the beginning of the season. Like, heading into the season, when I would ask Lakers people about this, they'd be like, where's he going to go? What's going to happen here? Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of more like, yeah, you know, there are technically options. I do think the Lakers are probably, of any individual option, the likeliest. I think the field is very loud, though. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think it makes the most sense for everybody here, you know, I don't know. Like, Occam's razor would tell us to just say, I think the people who are making these decisions are going to make the decision that makes the most sense. Now, that said, LeBron and Steph and Draymond, they have been in contact over the course of the year and just kind of talking to the extent that players talk about like what this could mean and all that. Do you think the Warriors are a more serious threat here than I'm making them out to be?
I have no idea on that end of things. Like, when I talk about this, I try to talk about it more from the Lakers' point of view rather than the LeBron point of view. I think that like when I think you've broken down part of the reason why it makes sense from LeBron's perspective to want to stay and try to work some things out. And I think there's a lot of reasons for the Lakers too as well. I also think the Lakers have very much been of a mind. Did you see AD's thing recently where he was on Draymond's show and talked about like his phone call with Pelinka? Did you happen to catch that?
Didn't catch that part of it. No.
So there was a part of it where he was talking about what Pelinka was saying to him as he was telling him he was being traded. Super interesting. Every Laker fan should check this out, right? And so just like the experience of from AD's perspective, finding out you just got traded. He was like, who'd I get traded for, Luka? You got to watch it. Yeah. And one of the things that AD said that Pelinka told him is that like, we want to get younger. And I know that from a Lakers perspective, this is something that's important to them. And so it makes sense for everybody to have LeBron come back, yes, but it's not totally harmonious with every goal that the Lakers have, right? And if you can – I think there is one train of thought that if you can turn LeBron into two guys in their 20s that can really go, that are just like starter-level guys, right, not a star – I think that is way too much of an over-reliance on Austin at that point. I think we need a dude in the number two spot to push Austin into more of a like all-around guard type of role rather than a we really need you to run unit. Anyway,
yeah, it needs to be a two-way, 2B situation again.
Yeah, at the very least, right? Some front court, and especially I think from a front court player, we got the guard spot covered between Luka and Austin on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that like – there is an argument for that. I don't necessarily agree with that argument with turning like LeBron leaving and then two, you know, like Watson and Eason. It wouldn't be those two specifically. But if you wanted to get young and fast and rangy and more athletic, you know what I'm saying? That's a route to go. So I think it's important to examine this from the Lakers' point of view of like, what are the Lakers' options? They've been planning to have all this money this offseason. What the hell do they plan on doing with it?
And that's the thing, you know, Jovan and I think it was in our group chat with the Great Western Forum group chat that we have. We were kind of trying to figure out like Austin's number and all of that stuff. And like, this is something that Rob is really going to have to relay to not just LeBron in whatever conversation about potentially returning, but Austin when it comes to whatever number that they sign Austin to. Luka, right? Like, hey, we kind of punted on one of your prime years here. Here's how it will all be worth it, you know. And that conversation as far as and especially like the other part of this that I should have mentioned earlier as far as like the case for LeBron returning, I actually think Luka and Austin would probably push for it. Like if you like really asked them, if you like pushed them on what would you prefer to have happen here? We know that Austin and LeBron are very close. And I actually think that over the course of the year that LeBron and Luka have gotten more close. And so like if they were asked, hey, here's what we could do with LeBron's money. Here is what LeBron is willing to accept. Those two options are relatively equal. I'd be curious what they push for there. I actually think they would probably push for LeBron. What do you think about that one?
No, I think there's a decent chance of that happening, right? And I think that in those dynamics, the Lakers are pretty well positioned to negotiate with not just LeBron, but Rui as well. Austin to an extent of like, we want you back. And this is, I think there's a lot of value in continuity and like keeping what's good and not just tearing everything down and all of that. So like, I do think there's a good chance that Luka and Austin would be like, yeah, we've got something good here. But like, I lost my train of thought on that. So yeah, if you're tearing something down to that extent, you want to keep it. Help me get back on track.
All right. So like, essentially I asked you if what LeBron or what Luka and Austin would push for if presented door number one, door number two.
Yeah, no, I think that they would push for keeping LeBron, but the team, sorry, I think it gets me back on track. The team is in a negotiating position with all of them to be like, but there's a point. There's a point where something else becomes a better option. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that is the emphasis on optionality. It's like, yes, we want you back, but it's limited to disrespect, even if your players are pushing for it in the question you ask.
It's so funny because the whole time we've been talking about this and in the chat, there's a lot of people saying the Lakers need to get younger. They need to get more athletic. And the irony here is that the only guy who is available is the old guy. And the only athlete between the three of those guys is the old guy. Like, if you want
to hear younger, my worst, you want to hear my worst idea?
Okay. Oh God.
That it's like, it's the worst instinct I have. And I need to get yelled at by Laker fans for this. What if Kawhi's contract gets bought out? Where's he going to go?
Or nullified, right?
I don't Kawhi, think yeah, that's – no, I'm sorry, not bought out. But you know what I mean, right? Mm-hmm. Aspiration shit breaks. They get punished. Voided contract. Kawhi's a free agent all of a sudden. Kawhi had a good ass year. Like, I know we make our jokes and all of that, but Kawhi was a top 10 player in the league this year, and that's – now I don't think he was 10. It's a guy who can hit jump shots, that plays defense, plays the four spot, right? If one were to not value leadership and intangibles and just –
mercenary.
Yeah, just not putting that bad of a team together. Like, I think Luka and Kawhi is a nasty playoff combo, like a 1-2 in terms of getting your shots up and hitting big time play. So you wouldn't have to give up any draft picks the way you would for a player like Giannis. What do you think of that?
It's funny because I truly believe that LeBron understands how to win on a consistent level to a much greater extent than Kawhi does. And that, like we just talked about, like the Lakers don't have the march that they did if you just swap out LeBron and Kawhi, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And that understanding, like while LeBron was out, you know, I think you and I and Jovan actually talked about this on Great Western Forum and the most recent episode that we did it, where remember at the beginning of the Lakers 9-game win streak, the first two wins that they got, LeBron was hurt. And I thought, and I think you and Darius, I think recorded a blueprint episode maybe you recorded it after LeBron came back and he assumed that role. Yeah. But when they had won those couple of games, I had asked around and I'd, you know, just, and the response from people that I spoke to, whether it be closer to LeBron or closer to the Lakers or, you know, within the middle of that Venn diagram was like, oh no, like this is going to be interesting because he had seen it. Right. Mm-hmm. And as much as I roll my eyes and we all roll our eyes at those reports at the beginning of the season that like LeBron is going to closely monitor the team while he is out. It's like, good to know. He's not going to turn around during basketball games, but he did pay close attention to what the Lakers needed whenever he returned. And then not only did he pay close attention to it, but he came back and he executed it. Yep. At a level that got the Lakers to that March month that they went on. So I don't know that and here's where it's complicated, right? Because that's just the role that Kawhi, I think, would naturally slot into. Like, he is very, should just do that, you know? So maybe he just shows up and he understands that's what he's supposed to do. Because that's essentially what he was doing when Paul George was there and James Harden was there. But that understanding of what the team needed and that flexibility to execute on what the team needed, I give LeBron a ton of credit for that at that stage of his career to be able to do that. And I don't think Kawhi is selfless enough to where if it was an apples to apples situation, he would do that. Other thing too with Kawhi, like pragmatically speaking, if his contract is nullified and like that money that he would have made just goes away, we know what he values in these situations. He's looking for a max. He's going to go to the team. Like people keep on saying, he really cares about staying in LA. LA is his priority. Absolutely not. Uncle Dennis got to get paid. Sure. And he's going to go to the team that pays him the most. And I don't want to be the team that pays Kawhi Leonard the most.
I totally get that. I don't know who pays him, though. You know, all that said, I totally agree with your argument. If the money's anywhere close, you go LeBron over Kawhi for a number of reasons, including on the court.
And health.
And health, right.
One healthy season. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, but just want to throw that out there. You could get a really high level player potentially without giving up future picks. You could save those first for the center that we all want or that two-way wing that we all want. All that shit's going to cost. So wherever you can get bang for your buck is important. But I ultimately agree, like, the best solution would be like, let's have Braun back, but at a more workable salary that allows us to add at least another like good starter to this team.
Yeah. If LeBron somehow, some way beats Houston on his own, is this even a question anymore?
Good point. Good point. And that number probably goes up too, right?
LeBron just shows up with his dick on the table. Like, just
would not be the first time.
I mean, he would earn it to beat Houston basically on his own. Like, this would be, we would be like, what we would be watching there. Remember those old reports when Jimmy Butler beat the shit out of the Wolves with like the third string guys?
Third stringers.
Yeah. That would be what LeBron would be doing to, you know, no offense to the Lakers guys there, but they are not like, you know, I don't think of a lot of these guys as the guy. Like, there's a scene in the fifth Harry Potter book where he's going off to like rescue everything and all that stuff. And he looks around at like the gang that's around him. And it's a super honest moment where he's like, this is not the group that I would have chosen. And I feel like LeBron is getting ready for the series. He's like, man, can we call J.R. Smith? Like, but yeah, I think it's not even a discussion. Like, if the Lakers, if he somehow keeps the, like, this plane up in the air, or the boat out, you know, above water long enough for Austin to potentially come back, and for Luka to potentially come back, and this season is resuscitated, and they like push San Antonio in that series. And I think it also matters like what that series would look like after those guys get back, if this miraculous series of events actually plays out. I think it would somewhat matter what the Lakers look like in that series against San Antonio, or in that series against OKC in the second round, or whatever it would be.
Yeah. Sorry for the interruption, but like, we're trying to win a championship. You know what I mean? And OKC rolled this team every time they played them. And the San Antonio games didn't look good either. We got one win in a game that Austin and LeBron, I don't think, played in. I think it was just Luka, one of the rare ones where it was just that. I don't think Wemby was in that one. I think it was when that early season run with Fox. But like, we have not looked good against the real championship contenders of the league.
Yeah, the top tier.
And so it's like, look, we're going to win 50. We've already won 50 plus games. It's a good team that might be able to even figure some shit out and get to the second round. But that is not ultimately where we're looking to go. And so, like, I need to hear a plan that is keeping what's good with this, but able to add enough talent to it that can get over the top of that and actually beat those really good teams.
I think that same conversation involves Austin.
It does. You know, see in a comment there, Fox targets Reeves. It's spot on. Happens every game. He delights on both ends.
Yeah. And so, and look, like, and this is where it's funny, Pete, because we started this entire discussion, this entire segment about LeBron with what we think is going to happen and what we would prefer to have happen. I would prefer for the Disney ending here, where LeBron keeps this thing afloat and the Lakers, you know, go out and they do all these crazy things. And it turns out March was real, except for the one game that we saw against OKC. But like, that's how I would like to see this happen. I would love to see Austin and Luka pan out long-term as a duo making $100 million between them every year. That would be great. However,
it would be great, but the front office can't wear Disney goggles. They can't afford to do that. We won't get there.
Which is tough, because Rob loves Disney, you know, and I had to make the joke. It's like part of my contract here that I wrote for myself in the lounge. All right, let's really quickly wrap with some questions here from the live audience. We did get a few. here's a fun name. Pinty 23, Ben Simmons.
Oh, Ben Simmons. Isn't he like catching marine life with his bare hands somewhere?
Did you not very see this? Australian.
Yeah, no. He was like standing in the ocean holding some creature in his hands, very proud of himself. So I'm a single on that.
Catching was never the problem with him in the NBA. It was shooting. Also, it honestly makes sense that he would go about that as inefficiently as just rather than just like shooting a reel, you know, like. But no, I don't think Ben Simmons makes much sense. Cole Anthony is an interesting one, but like we talked about.
Yeah, he's the most ball handling viable. Yeah. And I really like Spencer's tenure with us. I like him too, but I don't think a couple years later, I don't think he's at that point.
Yeah, I think it's pretty noteworthy that the Mavericks clearly needed a point guard all year. And most recently played for them, and they were still like,
that's fine. Yeah.
Good point. Let's see. We have more questions about the Drew Timmy decision. And I thought we spent plenty of time on that. Gentiles Unite says, does Anthony know that he is actually white/Caucasian? I didn't. How about that? You learn some every day. That's honestly what my dad says. Like anytime I like make white people jokes, he's like, you know, that's half of you, right? And it's like, I didn't choose for that.
I think that's this gentleman's point as well. Yeah.
No, that's where it came from. It was like the cayenne pepper thing. Let's see. Oh, Lonzo Ball. Any interest in Lonzo Ball?
I wish. Yeah, no, between the health and he wasn't good this year. Again, if you're adding somebody new, it's somebody that's just been absolutely crushing it right now, this week, today, at playing the sport of basketball. Like, you don't just show up and at like level 10 of playing good basketball. And just Lonzo hasn't played, like, several of these guys haven't played NBA hoops to where it's like, okay, now show up for the playoffs and you're going to be helpless. Like, that's, again, I think a lot of the arrows are pointing toward, and we'll see. It could be our beloved Lakers, star fuckers as they are, you know, adding some outside name, the biggest name you could think of, right? So,
yeah. Ben Simmons. I think that he is actually the biggest name out there. He's just.
Could you imagine the reaction to that? That would be very funny.
the
Jaden Ivey. Jaden Ivey is the funniest.
Oh, no. Did you guys hear like the sheer honesty in my voice right there? Just like, oh no. He's the closest to a productive NBA player of anybody that we've talked about.
Yeah, you know, prior to his injury. And I didn't know about all this other stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not kicking that hornet's nest with a joke here. All right. I think, let's see, just making absolutely sure. Dante Exum, I see Omar asking about Dante Exum. I think he's hurt again.
Yeah, I thought so too.
So, and then like Stanley Johnson, he hasn't been in the league for like 5 years now, right? Three years? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
about 3 years, yeah.
May as well just go get David Nwaba instead. All right. That is going to do it here, everybody, for this episode and this week's episodes here on the Lakers Lounge channel. We do still have, I'm still kind of negotiating when they want this to air, but I had a really fun conversation with a guest that I think you guys would really like to hear from. So that'll probably run early next week sometime, or like in that gap between end of season and beginning of the playoffs for the Lakers. As we kind of fill that downtime there. Pete, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, just doing my thing as usual.
LFR Pod is where you could find Pete. He's also in the offside chat with us every game. Mm-hmm. He'll be there tonight, right?
Yep.
As the well.
Phoenix game. Yep.
Yeah, so we will catch you guys there. And until the next time you guys hear from us, have a great rest of your weekends. Make somebody else's. And go Rory! Go do your thing, bud. Have a good one, everybody.
Bye, everyone.